listening to the Soul Trader podcast, music, creativity, and other plans, with your hosts, Simon James Betts and Corey Stewart.
We are back with episode 11 here in season 3 of the Soul Trader podcast.
Ooh, legs 11.
Indeed.
Beautiful.
So, we normally crap on a little bit about what we did last week, but I keep on forgetting what we did last week.
The operative word just being words being crap on.
Yeah. It's like when I was editing the sound bites, which I did a bit of a catch up on across social media over the last week.
There was a flurry of them, weren't there?
Yeah, well, I hadn't done them and I did a whole bunch. And I thought, I won't do them individually. I'll just do like kind of blocks of three and catch everybody up fairly quickly.
Yeah.
And the first episode was something like, we're back talking a load of shit. So, yeah, here we are again.
Wasn't that the definition of success?
Yes, it was indeed.
Yeah. Or us attempting to define success and what that means to us and
yes.
What that means to the general sort of, you know, definitions are different between people and all that.
Interesting little...
It was interesting.
Interesting little, side note is what it's probably called, is we were talking in that episode about Ed Sheeran.
Yes.
And I don't know if we mentioned that he was playing in Adelaide the night we recorded that podcast.
No, we didn't.
So
that,
we were
that was lost on me.
We were literally recording the podcast probably just before when people were like getting into the stadium, I think, because we record normally kind of late afternoon, early evening.
On a Tuesday.
On a Tuesday. But what I actually heard was, interesting enough, we've got the Fringe Festival going on, which we played at last year, which is we won't get into why, but it's the second biggest Fringe in the world after Edinburgh. Basically because they let anybody list in the catalogue in the program who wants to. Fringe is on WOMAD, World Music Festival, was on over the weekend.
Yeah, that's just finished.
We used to have the V8 race at this time, the Australian V8s. That's been moved. But Ed Sheeran came on Tuesday, and the interesting stat was that Tuesday night was the the highest occupancy of city hotels that's I think ever been,
right?
In March, but it might have been the caveat might have been ever on a Tuesday night.
Mm-hmm.
But it's obviously a pretty crazy time in Adelaide at the moment, and
it
helped out.
It's definitely, you know, there's a definite reason why it's called Mad March.
Yeah.
So, you know, Adelaide Festival, Fringe.
Oh, yeah, of course, the Adelaide Festival's on as well, which is what the Fringe is, the Fringe of.
Yes. And, yeah, WOM Adelaide and of course, Ed Sheeran. And
the Fringe is interesting, isn't it?
Whole heap of stuff.
The Fringe is, it's a Fringe festival off the Adelaide Festival. You know, it's kind of like...
That's what it initially was, but it's pretty much a standalone thing now.
Yeah,
it eclipses the Adelaide Festival. I mean, the Fringe Festival gets all the press.
Yeah.
Because it's full of freaky people, whereas the, you know, Adelaide Festival is a bit more highbrow.
It's a bit hoit the toit.
I'd much prefer the festival than the Fringe. For one thing, the fucking festival, Adelaide Festival, is vetted. You know, you've got to be of quality to get into it. Whereas with the Fringe, it's pay to play, and anyone can have a fucking go.
Yeah, like us last year.
Well, that's right. We're great examples of that. I think we did pretty well last year, but
But I mean, I get what you're saying.
We were part of the quality, but oh god.
The funny thing is, though, that the Adelaide Festival, again, it is that kind of a slightly more highbrow kind of stuff. I mean,
yeah.
The Fringe is a lot of. I mean, look, I go to the Fringe all the time. I don't go to a million things, but some of the comedy is really good. Some of the acrobatic, musical kind of combination-y kind of stuff is actually kind of, you know, really good quality stuff. But the interesting thing with the Adelaide Festival is AF is their kind of logo now.
Yes.
And it's just like, so they're trying to be kind of slightly like, we're really cool. We like cool kids, you know, because it's as fuck, basically.
Yeah.
And it's like they kind they play on that.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, we're not really highbrow. We're kind of cool as well. And, you know, to be honest, I mean, there's been some stuff that I've heard, you know, on radio talking about. I thought, geez, that sounds really interesting. And then I go, I'm thinking, when's that on at the Fringe? Because it's sounding a bit quirky and different and edgy. And then it's actually on at the festival, not the Fringe. And I think the thing is that there's this, you know, at one point there was probably a divergence more so with the weird stuff being at the Fringe. And now that now the kind of more traditional festivals are getting a bit more daring.
Yeah.
And the weird is becoming a bit more mainstream.
Yes.
And so at the start, you know, like as I said, the main thing is with the Fringe, and as you said, it's just anybody can list, and that's part of the problem. Part of the reason why the Fringe is really big is because anybody, like I play a lot of pub gigs, I could put every single one of those pub gigs during the festival, Fringe festivals, kind of, 2 or 3 weeks, I could put every gig and call it a Fringe show and get listed in the Fringe if I wanted to.
Yeah.
It would cost me money.
Yes.
But that's part of the reason the Fringe is so big. And I don't like that because I think that people who have a dedicated, specific show that is for the Fringe, like we did last year and like a lot of the touring acts do, that's what the Fringe should be about, is people who've, you know, put something together, you know, specifically for that. As you say, it's a bit diluted, unfortunately.
But and, yes. And not much emphasis on local stuff.
No, probably not. I mean, I call it a local.
Well, that's the main criticism of the Fringe, and has been for many years, is that, you know, there's not as much attention paid to local acts as it should. Mm. So, you know, I mean, that's something that, you know, if they so desire, they can, you know, those powers that be can rectify that. But, I mean, my main beef is that it gets hijacked by fucking comedians. You know, they should have their own bloody festival and stop interacting with, you know, the Fringe Fest, because, you know, it should be more sort of music-based rather than comedian-based. But that's because I'm a musician and I'm a shit comedian. So that's probably why. But you know.
You could be like the grumpy comedian.
The grumpy comedian.
Yeah.
I have a hard time trying to be the grumpy musician, let alone
just
the grumpy comedian.
Like,
no, actually, I do that pretty well, being a grumpy musician.
You can just come out and go, who hates the Wiggles? <It's just> like, who's with me? and then
the anti-Wiggle movement.
Everybody goes, we love the Wiggles. It's like, you just go, you can get fucked then and just walk off.
Oh, I almost spat out my water then.
And it's just like,
oh, I would have wrecked the microphone.
It'd be just like, that'd be the outrage. Do you know what I mean?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
You've got to just have them.
Yeah, but you've got to be careful these days, because you'll get cancelled by all these bloody wigglers.
This is true.
You know?
This is true.
And there's nothing worse than getting cancelled by pro-wiggle activists.
But the thing with comedians is most comedians just go, oh, feel free. Because the thing is, the people who get the comedy, if you share me doing something, they'll get it and they'll just come to my show. All you're doing is helping me out, you know, because at the end of the day, all I'm doing is cracking jokes. Yes. It'd be worse if we did it in between two songs. So they're just like, geez, these musicians are grumpy. You know, like as a comedian, you can get away with a lot.
We'll get onto the topic in a sec, but
what topic?
But you know, I do love watching videos of comedians really going to town on hecklers.
Oh yeah,
because it just takes a certain width. I mean, I love comedy, you know, you know, it would just be better if they had their own festival as well. But musicians can't do that with hecklers as much.
You can't be as harsh.
No, and that's a shame.
Yeah.
You know.
I mean, the thing is, though, that, I don't know, I mean,
I mean, we have touched on this in an earlier podcast. You know, if someone yells out, you know, play us some Beyonce, and, you know, you should have every right to tell them to get fucked.
Yeah, it doesn't work if you're little kid comes up and goes, can you play the Wiggles? Mr. Corey, can you play the Wiggles? Fuck off.
No. Well,
Mum, Corey told me to fuck off.
Yeah, well, you know, you gotta have a bit of... You've got to have a bit of nous about you when you, you know, when you're talking to. But then again, I mean, you know, if you're playing at a venue and it's like, well, what's a bloody 5-year-old doing in the pub in the first place? You know, it's like, get him home, you bad parents.
Get back in the pokey lounge.
Get back in the pokey lounge with your mum and dad, your little rapscallion.
No, my gig was full of kids the other day. It was actually quite fun because they were actually really well-behaved kids, at least around me. They were running around on the golf course that I happened to be playing at. And right. No, they were lovely, actually. They were really nice to me. They were kind of like, are you going to be playing some songs in a minute? But they weren't like, can you play this? Can you play that? They were just like, what are you going to be playing?
See, like, my theory is that you know, kids just love music and it really doesn't matter what you play. You know, you don't have to play Wiggles music to attract kids. You just play music because they're just transfixed by, you know, a guy with a guitar.
And, you know, segueing from that,
yeah,
you know what people who love podcasts like? It's when the hosts get to the point.
Yes.
And get onto the topic.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, the topic today.
Because we could talk shit for hours.
And we'll talk shit about this topic too anyway. So
we will.
But the topic that we're going to be discussing today is, and the title of this podcast will be, you know, Are Bands Dead? The Rise of the Tech-Savvy Solo Artist.
There you go. You've got the title all worked out.
Well, that's what I had written as a suggestion.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I'm not saying that that's set in concrete or anything, but you know, it's come from a few articles that I have stumbled across, notably sort of quoting the lead singer for Maroon 5, Adam Levine, I think his name is.
Mm-hmm.
No relation to April, or Avril or whatever her name is. April, I think. That's her sister. Anyway, so, and her other sister, May, yeah. You know, he was talking about, I think he was talking more about rock bands, but, you know, he made a big point of saying that, you know, the time, I'm paraphrasing here, but essentially the time of the band is dying or it's dead. Especially with rock music anyway, as a genre. And, you know, I suppose if you're wanting sort of popular, if you're after popular mainstream success, especially if you're still wanting to go down that path of being signed to a label and all of that sort of stuff, you are definitely better off doing it solo rather than being with a group of people and actually, you know, playing instruments. So so I suppose, are bands dead? And there's a number of perspectives that we can look at, you know, from an audience perspective, from a musician's perspective, from an industry perspective. I think that's what you were talking about sort of in our chat before we press record for this particular podcast episode. So yeah, it'd be interesting to see what we can uncover through our discussion today on that. Because I mean, I do think that bands, it seems that, you know, the notion of bands and the notion of that all for one, one for all sort of element of being in a band is becoming less and less relevant, because I suppose in a broader sense, the society is becoming more, you know, me, rather than, you know, the good of the one is outweighs the good of the many rather than the other way around.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think that there's, I was kind of saying before that there's the individual stuff, the stuff around, you know, people, you know, those, as you're just talking there, kind of the individual and the relationships and all those kind of things. And then there's, you know, there's the industry stuff in terms of, as you said, getting signed and publishing and record labels and obviously them having to manage multiple people versus individuals. I think there's the social media stuff, which again, if you're a band versus individuals, it becomes an individual conversation with an individual, or a kind of an individual, I guess, relationship in a sense, versus, you know, you're following a band, who are you interacting with, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And then I think, which is probably a place we can start, is that for bands starting out, it's not so much industry, it's more the reality of band versus solo. It's been trending this way for a while. I think the pandemic had something to do with it. But, you know, years ago, there was music and it was like a pub would put a band on a Friday or Saturday night, just in the corner of the front bar. They'd have a stage at the end, you know, shove a four-piece band onto this tiny little stage, and a whole bunch of people would come in and, you know, it'd be just be kind of mayhem. And at least in Australia, we've had the pokey revolution, which also had something to do with it. A lot of people complained about pokies.
Mm-hmm.
And on the flip side, and they are bloody awful things because they just take vulnerable people's money. But one thing they have done is they have created all these spaces in a lot of venues,
mm-hmm.
nice spaces where people like to go and sit, like to go and eat, and those venues like to have a musician in the corner who's potentially still partly funded by the pokies. But even from a beginning perspective, you know, we do stuff together. For anybody who's listening who doesn't know, so as a duo, as Sole Trader, we don't do covers. We just do original stuff. So, I've been doing it for a long time. Obviously, playing what you kind of refer to as a hybrid thing, where it's a mix of originals and covers. I go and play them in wineries and bars and stuff like that. Those gigs are really easy to come by. When I say really easy, it's still hard work. But the other thing is that if somebody rings me up or sends me a text message. Like the other day, somebody rang me up and said, you know, you're available this date. I'll just like bring up my calendar and go, yep. And then he goes, oh, actually, are you available this Friday? It's like, actually, I am. And he's like, cool, lock that in. So within a 2-minute phone conversation, I picked up two gigs. Now, if it was you and I doing it in those pubs, I'd have to go, what are the dates? I'll write them down and I'll get back to you. And then I'd have to try to get you on the phone. And mm-hmm. if you're busy, I've got to wait. And he goes, oh, if he's like, oh, I need an answer.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So you might miss out. If it's a band, it's like, I'm not sure what the thing is, but you know, the more things there are, the more complex it gets.
Yes.
If you've got one person, simple, two, more complex, three, gets more complex, four, more complex, five.
It's like herding cats.
Yeah. I mean, imagine having in like one of those bands with like seven people where you've got a brass section. It's like, oh, the brass section isn't available, so we can't do the gig.
Yeah. Yeah.
It gets complex. So from that grassroots level, and I don't have to rehearse, I don't have to go, oh, I've got a gig to do. I need to catch up with Corey or the band to rehearse.
Yeah.
You know, and I know that you've been doing some stuff with bands and, you know, you rehearse on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that from a very, you know, if you're going to rehearse, you've got to have a place to rehearse.
Yeah.
You might need a rehearsal room.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got to make that time. Was all that coordination, all that prep. The load in and load out's much more complicated.
You got more equipment for a start.
Yeah, so even from that very kind of, you know, seed idea, you can see why people go, there's an element of it's like it's just really hard as a band.
Yeah.
If you're a singer, guitarist normally, maybe mm-hmm. piano player, and you can, you know, you want to just crank out some tunes, then that's a real easy path forward.
Yeah.
And people are lazy as shit.
Mm.
People, like you said before, about having this kind of commitment to something. So what's the, you know, it's the easiest path forward, so they take it.
Yeah.
And if you look at relationships in general, like let's look at, we've spoken about KISS in passing. Obviously, I know a bit about their kind of the way they've spoken about their dynamic. They go, because they've changed members over the years, and they go, it's hard. It's like a marriage, but there's four people.
Mm.
It's hard enough with a marriage with two people.
Yeah.
You know, imagine four trying to build, have those relationships, all those relationships, all that dynamic. When you're all growing and changing over time, I get that it's a challenge. Mm. So yeah, so that from that very small stages, I can see why it's difficult. But if it was easy, everybody'd be doing it. Just because something's hard doesn't mean you shouldn't do it. You want to create something greater than the sum of its parts.
Hmm.
And if you're the only fucking part, it's never going to be greater than the sum of its parts because there's just you. And it's just like...
I think there's a difference between a band that is revolved around one or two people that are songwriters,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to a band, say, like U2, which are four. Although, very, very recently, I think U2 are going to be doing a whole series of gigs in Las Vegas or something like that, and Larry Mullen Jr., the drummer, isn't going to be playing with them, so they're going to have another drummer doing that. And, you know, they were... there was a lot of sort of backlash against that, but I think it was quoted that you know, they had already agreed to do it, and then it had to be cancelled and then reinstated, and in between that time, you know, something was happening with Larry Mullen Jr. and he wasn't able to at that time participate in the gigs, but they were already committed to it, so. So yeah. It's hard to sort of believe what's going on, but you know, I think there's a big difference between a band that's put together around a songwriter, or say for instance, Soul Trader becomes a band. It would still just be around yourself and myself, and there would be two or three others that aren't as invested in it because they're part of a group of people that is surrounding us and the music, as opposed to Soul Trader started off as four individuals and it's all for one, one for all. It's like the Four Musketeers. So I think there's also a difference in that too. So I think what Adam Levine was talking about was that, you know, there's big bands necessarily don't exist anymore, say like U2 or Kiss or Coldplay or whatever. You know, they're probably the last of the bands that formed with the same people that have gone all the way through. It's like, you know, rather than, you know, Ed Sheeran decides to get a trio behind him. So there's, you know, Ed and the Sheerans or something like that. And, you know, that's a different sort of band dynamic, you know.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
But that would be interesting, Ed and the Sheerans. But... wonder how many people he could pack out by doing that. I think people would probably get really upset. It's like, why are all these people behind you? I was just expecting you and the guitar. But yeah, I think that's another thing to sort of throw in the mix as well. You know, and that's sort of, you know, in the original music scene, when you're talking about, say, you know, cover bands, because of course, you know, every local industry around the world would have, you know, a cover band scene. Because there's not as much money to be spent on entertainment in venues anymore, because there's so much more competition for the, you know, the disposable income of punters. You know, big bands as in, you know, large groups, you know, say four or five and more, tends to be pushed out because, you know, I'm in a five-piece cover band at the moment, and it's like, you know, it's really painful to divide money amongst five people.
Yeah, I mean, people
whereas it's much easier just going, you know, as a duo or as a solo artist, because whatever you make, and you can charge more in accordance to, you know, how many people are in there, how many people in the group, you know, in proportion, because there's just not as much money around as it used to be.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I
or there is the same amount of money, but the venue is not willing to invest as much.
Yeah. Yeah. That I mean, I,
you know, so I mean, there's definitely sort of financial restraints.
Yeah, I mean, I say to people all the time, like, people will say, "Why don't you play these gigs together?" You know, because I'll be saying, "Oh, you know, I've got a card that I hand out and say, Soul Trader, do original stuff and play these gigs by myself." And they'll say, "Why don't you play them together?" It's just like, well, it's not economically viable for us to play them together, because we can play in two different venues on the same day, which we have done, and you a solo artist earns X and a duo doesn't earn 2X.
Yeah.
It earns, you know, maybe X and a half.
Yeah.
And so it's a pay cut. Anytime I'd be taking a pay cut if you came and joined me, whereas you can play a gig somewhere else, which you're perfectly capable of doing.
Yeah.
And I can understand in some situations that that's not the case. And most duos, you know, one plays an instrument and one sings. That tends to be a lot of the duos floating around the place.
Yeah.
And the reason why they do that is it's just like, I can play the guitar and it's like, I can sing. It's like, we should form a duo.
Mm.
And they don't have the option to play separately.
Yeah.
Because neither of them can do the whole thing.
That's right.
But, yeah, I mean, I think that bigger picture band, like looking at bands like U2 and stuff like that, that have been around for a long time, and, you know, it was a kind of a... being in a band once upon a time was like being in a gang.
Yeah.
You know, it was us against the world. And, you know, I had mates where we'd jam and it was just like we wanted to be the next Kiss. We wanted to be some sort of rock band or whatever. And it was just like we'd write songs and it's just like, yeah, it's us and our electric guitars and, you know, whereas, you know, as it's become more kind of, I guess, business-like in a sense –
Well, it certainly has become more corporatized, but I mean that sort of element of you know, us against the world. You know, I suppose it still can exist. I mean, there's no reason why it couldn't. It's just that the infrastructure around you know, around the music industry now has just changed.
Yeah,
you know? Like I mean, There was a picture that appeared on my Facebook feed, and it was an old picture of a band that I was in. A mate of mine who was the drummer of that band found the picture and put it up on Facebook, and it was us in, you know, sort of early 20s, and you know, the band was called Big Bang Theory, and you know, it was just three of us. It was me trying to emulate sort of you know, sort of post-punk sort of Gary Numan stuff. You know, we're always looking for a keyboard player, but there was just three of us, you know, bass, guitar and drums. And, you know, we had written this sort of manifesto of what we wanted to do, and we were all very serious and stuff like that. I mean, so where are those days gone? You know, it's just like, you know, it's, you know, I look back on that and just go, oh, you know, those were the days. Mm. But, you know, I mean, that was a sort of all for one for all thing. I mean, you know, that was that feeling of, you know, yeah, we, you know, kicking against the pricks or us against the world and all of that sort of stuff.
I mean, partly the world's changed actually as well.
Yeah, well, you that's know, true.
It's just like back in the day, it was just like, you know, we're going to do this. And it's like, you can't do that. And it's like, we're going to do it anyway. And now it's like, we're going to do this. And it's like, good on you. You know, you be individual and you do you. That's, oh, I respect your right to be an individual. Do you know what I mean?
Like, it's just like, well, I've got nothing to kick against.
Yeah.
There's no prick to kick against anymore.
It's just like the world is, it's like you can, you know, you can do whatever the fuck you want now with music, and it's just like seeming, it's all right, it's just whatever.
Yeah.
So it's kind of changed. But I mean, I think that you were talking about obviously bands and you know, looking at those bands like U2, and they're a bit of a kickback with maybe doing a gig where one of the members isn't there. And I mean, I think that's kind of, say a band like U2 have been so solid, that's going to be more seen as being more kind of inappropriate, I guess. Mm. And I think we mentioned before we came on air, you know, like once upon a time, the Beatles toured Australia and Ringo didn't come. You couldn't have done the tour without, you know, John or Paul, but we can get away with it without Ringo. It'll be all right. And it, you know, I think that some band members are potentially more valuable than others. I mean, it's interesting. You look at a band like Queen and you go, Freddie Mercury's not replaceable, but, you know, they've been touring the world recently, you know, doing, I guess it's more of a Queen tribute in a sense.
Yeah.
Because they are just kind of, it's not like they're writing new stuff. It's not, you know,
they don't have the bass player anymore either. So it's mainly Roger Taylor and
Brian May.
Brian May.
Yeah. I mean, but you know, you look at a band like AC/DC, obviously lost their singer, but I mean, that was fairly early on.
Yeah.
And they were able to kind of continue on very successfully. But you know, some bands, if the singer left, you know, I used to follow Skid Row, and Sebastian Bach was the lead singer of that band. And when he left, it was just like, there's no way I'm following that band without him being the singer. He was the big draw card.
Yeah.
His voice. Queensrÿche were the same. You know, Geoff Tate left, and it's just like, and they had a huge falling out. Those guys were together since school, and it didn't work. But you can also see from a record company perspective, like the industry side, which I mentioned at the beginning, is if you're looking to sign a band, you're going, well, who writes the songs? Singer. Oh, the singer writes the songs, does he? All by himself. Right, so you other guys, are you? How important are you?
Mm.
And if there's not that real band of brothers thing where it's just like, no, fuck you, if you don't want me and my mates. Whereas he's like, you know, they're like, we're out of here, boys. And he sticks his head back and he goes, can we like hook this up with just myself? Do you know what I mean? Like if there's not this all for one, one for all kind of thing that you think you mentioned, where it's like, if we're not all in, none of us are in, then it's difficult. And so the label's got to kind of sign everybody.
Yeah.
Now, one thing that people who aren't involved in music might not know, that Queen are an interesting example. They used to write songs individually. So songs used to be written and listed as written by individuals.
Mm-hmm.
And then they got to a point where they said, from now on, every song is written by Queen, and it's just a four-way split.
Yeah.
But another thing that happens is that a percentage of royalty, so if you've got one person who's a songwriter, like, I mean, I don't know if it happened with Crowded House, but Crowded House might be an example. You know, they were real, in the early days, really solid trio. You know, had a million changes since then, but there was the three of them, but Neil Finn was writing all the songs.
Yeah.
There's every chance that he said, I'll take 50% of my songwriting royalties and split that 50% with you guys. So he would take, you know, he might take 50%. He might say 25 to you, 25. There's only three of them. He might go 25, 25, 50.
Mm-hmm.
While you're in the band. You know, so while you're actively in the band, that'll be the split. So it's because that's where a lot of the money comes from. You know, if you're sitting at home and your songs are being played on the radio, there's no live gigs, there's no income.
Yeah.
So it's album sales and the royalties. And the royalties just keep ticking over.
Yeah.
So if we haven't released an album for a while, the sales are down, we aren't touring at the moment, we're having a break, but the songs are getting played on the radio. So there's some other splits kind of there. So that takes also, so that's an industry kind of, well, it's not an industry thing, that's a personal choice.
Yeah.
But it's linked to that fact that, you know, there's a mechanism there. And you have to kind of, you have to have some respect and appreciation for your bandmates to go, yeah, yeah, I want them around. I want this Band of Brothers thing. I mean, when we, and excuse the fact that we're saying Band of Brothers because I guess we're both blokes, so we're thinking of it Band of Brothers. But, you know, a family of kind of musicians. Mm. They don't have to be brothers necessarily, brothers and sisters. But, you know, you're in it together and, well, if I'm getting all the money and you guys are only getting paid if we play gigs and sell a few albums, you're going to be pretty pissed off at me. So that's, you know, some give and take there.
Yeah.
I look at people now and often think, you know, like, why don't we join together? A bit like we have. Look at other people and think, you know, wouldn't joining together and doing something bigger than yourselves maybe be better than doing the individual thing? But there does seem to be a bit of an ego attached very much to, it's all about me, me, me.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you look at famous bands even, you know, you got Matchbox 20. Rob Thomas went off and did his own thing.
Mm-hmm.
In Australia, you got Powderfinger. And Bernard Fanning went off and did his own thing. And as the front person, as the singer, it's very easy for you to do that.
Yes.
You know, because you're very recognisable. A song comes out and you go, hey, I know that voice.
Yeah.
And it's like, this is Bernard Fanning. This is not Powderfinger. Whereas if you're a guitarist in a band or a drummer, you could go and play on a million projects. And it's very hard for the average person, you know, and you know, a musician might go, that drumming sounds like, and if you looked into it, you'd be able to work it out. But you're not going to know for sure. You know, if you hear some guitar or some drums, you're not going to know without looking it up. I definitely know that is this guitarist.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? It's not,
yeah.
You know, somebody can copy a guitar sound and copy a riff and you're not going to know. A voice is really easy to tell. And so singers have this innate advantage. So they hold all the cards often with these bands. They can hold the rest of the band to ransom. So I think that there's challenges there as well, you know.
Yeah.
That, you know, musicians also go, well, maybe I'd just be a hired gun. I can play drums for five different artists, always be on the road. You know, I mean, our mate Darren, who, you know, we're playing a gig at the end of the month, Soul Trader gig, and on a bill with one of his bands, but he mm-hmm. plays in, four bands?
Yeah, yeah.
And so, you know, it's a bit of a juggling act, but he's keeping himself busy. Yeah. If he only played in one band, he'd be playing very few gigs.
Yeah.
But when you're playing in five, you're all over the place. And so from a musician perspective, there's some benefit to not being tied down to one band.
Exactly.
So there's a greater creative output.
Mm.
That's mean, right. Whereas that's never been my mentality is always I want to be part of something bigger.
Mm.
I would prefer to be part of something, you know, that's greater than the sum of its parts. Rather than, I could have gone and sung in five different bands if I wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
People all the time asking for a singer. It's like, and I see the ad and think, that sounds like it'd be a bit of fun actually. But it's like, it's just, you know, your ego getting ahead of you. Mm. It's like, just focus on the one thing. Focus on the thing. Yeah. Focus on the, you know, what's wrong with this? You know, getting back to the marriage thing, it's like, you know, you hear about these guys on the radio that have got multiple families and you go, fucking hell, just commit to one thing and just this is me. Put your stake in the ground.
Mm.
I don't know.
Well, I mean, I certainly don't have a problem with, you know, playing more than one thing. I think it just depends on what your sort of goals and your vision of what you are as a musician or an artist or a songwriter, or how you see how you see success, you know, in that, you know, if you you know, want to be challenged by more than one project, well then that's fine. If you just want to just stay on the one thing because that's what you identify with, You know, some people identify with one thing, others are journey people. You know, they you know, play with others, and they define themselves on a project by project basis rather than just one. So, you know, I suppose it's a matter of finding out sort of where you sit in that, and and then, you know, sort of move accordingly to it.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you see, my thing is, it's like if you get successful, you know, like if you achieve some success with your one thing, you know, your main focus, then, you know, I look at then and kind of go, oh yeah, like, I mean, I wouldn't, if somebody said, can you come and sing some backing vocals on my album, or I've got this track, you know, like a you know, Carlos Santana, he did a lot of stuff where he got different singers to come in.
Yeah.
You know, like if somebody came along and said, would you be willing to sing a track? I wouldn't go, no, fuck that. Mm. It's Soul Trader or it's nothing.
Mm.
At that point I go, well, I've already well established myself. People know that if they hear me in that project, it's just kind of like, it might draw some people to that project and it might draw some people the other way.
Yeah.
And there's a substantial thing at the other end of it. So, I mean, I'm certainly not I wouldn't rule that out, but I always think you can spread yourself too thin.
Sure.
You don't have the time to, I guess, you know, again, have that kind of real kind of commitment and focus, you know, and sacrifice to, no, I can't do all those other things at the moment. It has to be this, and it has to be this with a level of intensity that it gets to where I want it to get. That's also a bit of a challenge, I guess. Charlie's here, by the way. He's just tried to go through a gap that's probably slightly too small for him, and he's had to back out.
Hello, Charlie.
I think the other thing that I mentioned at the start is one of the kind of elements with this is the social media thing.
Yeah.
Which is that there is there's an element where people want to connect, you know, on a, I guess, somewhat of a human level. And it's very hard, or it's more difficult, the more people you have. So if you're following an artist and it's an individual, you're following an individual. You know who you're kind of, you know, interacting with, even though they're not the one doing it, which is the other strange thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's one person, and, you know, the tweets or the posts, you know, they're mono, it would be a way to put it, I guess.
Yeah.
And then the more people you have, you've got five people, and then a social media statement is made. It's just like, you can be a bit more, you can make a statement, and you can say, this is what I think about this.
Yeah.
And people go, I know exactly who that is, because that's Ed Sheeran's thing, so that's what Ed Sheeran thinks.
Yeah.
But if you've got like a five-piece band, and they say something, it's just like, well, how much debate did this take up? How much conversation was required to come up with this perspective?
Yeah.
It's not, I think this, we think this. Charlie, go round, dude. Like, it's not hard.
He's all right.
We've got the desk in a slightly different position, and there's like a gap where he's just like, I think I can get through there. I'm sure I can. If you're following a band, it feels a little bit more maybe business-like. I mean, I try to, you know, we're doing a bit more on social media, and we're sharing the kind of thing. The other challenge is obviously, you know, if Ed Sheeran is doing something, he's by himself, and he goes off and does something, and he's like, here I am doing this. And then if you're in a band, it's like, well, you could have five band members all off doing different things. Are they all spamming the social media saying, this is what I'm up to?
Yeah.
And so we've been, you know, sharing it. But the thing is, if we post something that is like, if it's got a picture of us, then it's obviously who's talking, because there's a picture that's representing the thing that we're talking about. If it doesn't have a picture, I just go, well, it's either you or me. And you just kind of tag it with Simon of Soul Trader, Corey of Soul Trader. So they know. So we are kind of trying to build that, personal dialogue, so to speak.
Mm.
But it does become more challenging because if you're one person, then every post that gets posted is from you. Every time somebody responds, it's to you.
It's a much more direct communication, isn't it, between the artist and the fan, the artist and the person, the audience member.
Yeah, it's just a simpler transaction.
Yeah, and I think, I suppose today, you know, sort of thinking back to why is there more sort of solo artists rather than bands, it's just easier. Yeah. And
it's easier to be single than in a relationship, and that's what a band is.
Yeah.
And it's just like, and that's kind of like my point is in a sense. I mean, industry stuff aside, people just don't like commitment. People just want easy, you know. And it's just like, I don't necessarily think that easy is better. That's you know, probably my perspective is that living in your comfort zone, which is, you know, I mean, not to say you can't be a solo artist and push your comfort zone, you can.
Yeah, of course.
But you are just who you are, and yes, you can build your skill set. But as you would know, and a lot of musicians will know, the sum of the parts, you know, like you take two musicians, yourself and myself,
mm-hmm.
you know, we're more than the sum of the parts when we play together. It's not even close.
Mm.
You know, you do a gig, I do a gig, we do it together. It's just like, holy shit, you know, the audience reaction, because you've suddenly got all this interplay that you just don't have.
Yeah.
You know, you've got solo artists on TikTok and other platforms
mm-hmm.
where, yeah, some will sit there and play guitar and sing.
Yeah.
But then some will overdub themselves with harmonies and then bass and drums, and they'll do all the other stuff.
Yeah.
Because they know that a more, you know, like adding extra stuff to it is like, whoa, you know.
And technologically you can do that now.
Yeah, well,
That's the other part of it. Yeah, you're right. Is the technology part?
It's you like go drummer, with, yeah, just you know, in the
with,
computer.
With the advent of home recording, you know, studio prices lowering for, you know, hardware and software, and you know, anyone can create sort of some sort of songwriting suite or recording setup at home, and they then become bigger than the sum of their parts. You know,
yeah.
And there's only just one person. It's only just one person you have to argue with. There's not two or more opinions that you've got to wade through.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like you know, as you say before, you know, if there's a gig coming along, you know, you can't, you know, you don't have the issue of having to ring up other people and try to organise, you know, rehearsal schedules and stuff like that. It's like, you know, it just depends on the group of people that you have around. You know, some people work really well together and some people don't. And you know, maybe there's this sort of inherent change in just in the way that people deal with each other, because everything is so – the expectation of information, of anything – everything is just so immediate, you know, because information is so immediate, you know.
Yep.
There's this expectation that, you know, you ask a question, bang, you get the answer straight away. You know, the more people you have in the chain, or the more technology you have in the chain, you know, the more margins of error you've got to contend with. And I suppose, you know, dealing with yourself as a solo artist, or an audience watching a soloist, or especially, you know, a record label or a publisher or someone who works in the industry, just dealing with one person rather than a group, would just seem to be easier in the path of, you know, less resistance. Because at the end of the day, you know, it's much more corporatized, and it's much more driven around the accumulation of wealth rather than trying to change the world.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No.
You know. So absolutely.
But I mean, even the gig we've got, so you know, we've got a gig on the 31st.
Yeah.
And you know, Darren, who's been on the podcast, friend of the podcast.
Yes.
Darren Zaza. Yeah. So his band's launching a CD, and you know, they kind of came to you and said, there's a support.
I don't know if it's they're not launching a CD, but they've written a whole heap of stuff. Oh, it might culminate into a CD.
More stuff. But, sorry, they wanted to launch a bunch of songs they've been working on.
They've launched a whole bunch of songs on Spotify, and the band's called Richter.
Yeah,
and they're a 5-piece, and you know we know them all, and they're all great, and they're all sort of personalities in their own right.
Yeah, but I mean,
You know, they're wanting to. Sort of really showcase those tunes and get some momentum happening with people going to see their music, and they've had the amazing foresight to ask us to support them because of course you know we are the secret missing ingredient the secret sauce to their beef Wellington so but you know I
But the thing with that is, I was just going to say, like the interesting thing with that was, you came to me and said, "Hey, Darren's asked if we're available on the 31st," and I looked at my calendar, and went, "Yeah, I'm not available. I got a gig." So then I got onto the venue where I'm playing, and they'd only just announced that they were going back to regular gigs, and I'd had this gig booked for a while, and I asked very nicely, "Can I swap with the guy from the week before?" Because I happened to be free the week before, and thankfully, you know, that guy was able to. I was able to switch, so we can do the gig. But that was part of that kind of complex thing where, you know, if Darren had come to you and it was just you, you could have gone, yep.
Oh,
but you had
sure.
to kind of come to me.
But
and
the thing is that if you came to me and said, look, I can't do it, I can't swap, blah, 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 I would have done it myself.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, so but it's not, but you and I are much more malleable and flexible than others.
Of course, but it's still, but obviously it's but not the same.
It wouldn't have been a preferable thing.
No,
it's
no.
Like it would have been good to have, but thankfully we are. But, you know, it look, dealing with you in that sort of way, it's like, you know, is not a pain in the ass. You know, it's like it's a relatively easy sort of thing. It's like, okay, you know, it depends on you're talking to someone saying, you know, they offer a gig. It's like, okay, well, look, can I let you know by the end of the day?
You know, yeah.
And by hook or by crook, it would be up to me to try and find an answer and get back to them by the end of the day. But
I think that you know, you're talking about, you know, dealing with the individual, and I mean, I'm still reading these books that I've been reading for a while, these Johann Hari books, and I just kind of, you know, everybody's got their AirPods in, you know, and they're sitting watching Netflix on a laptop, next to somebody else who's sitting watching Netflix on a laptop, with earbuds in, instead of watching something on the TV that's on the wall together, because we're all about me, now.
It's the cult of the individual.
Fuck everybody else, and it's just like, so I think my kind of thing is. You know what we were talking about at the start, which is we're a band, fuck the world, you know, fuck everybody. The real thing with bands now and the fuck the world is fuck that. Like, you know, like push against that. Push against the fact that, no, we can be something greater than the individual, more than the sum of the parts. We can do something brilliant together and we don't have to be so individualistic and it's all about me. I mean, yeah. I've been around a while and I've always wanted to do something that was more than just me. And I was brought up on bands and, you know, I mean, when I listen to new stuff on Spotify, look, a lot of it is by solo artists because a lot of it's by solo artists, but I couldn't give two shits if it's a band. But I mean, I get where a lot of that stuff comes from.
Yeah.
But
well, you've even got solo artists adopting monikers that make them sound like they're a band.
Like Soul Trader.
Well, I suppose,
Well, I mean, technically Soul Trader was a duo. Yeah. It was you and me, and then it was me by myself. And I just kind of went, I guess I'm just going to roll with this now. I mean, so it was always a little bit different.
That was a little bit of a pioneering move because there weren't too many sort of or even duos or soloists that were adopting, you know, a band moniker.
I've always been ahead of my time.
Yeah. And now it's like, you know, there's lots and lots of soloists out there that are adopting, you know, adopting a name that's not them, you know. So, and I mean, I think it's kind of cool, but it's still weird, you know, that you call yourself a band name, but there's only just you.
Yeah.
But that's the way of the world now, I suppose.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, it's like you want to be looked at as a band, but you don't want to hassle. You don't want to have the hassle of four other fucking idiots that you got to work with.
Yeah, I don't.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And essentially, I suppose, you know, maybe some people, maybe there's a fact that just other people just let you down sometimes.
Well, I mean, I think,
you know, maybe that's why some people sort of want to go down the solo route or whatever. I don't know.
Look, I mean, I get that too. I mean, that's the hard part, is that trying to get equal level of commitment from multiple people is difficult.
Mm.
You know, I mean, going back to the Kiss example, Paul and Gene were equally committed in slightly different ways, but it was a balance, you know. So,
sure. Yin and yang, yeah.
You know, yeah. Like, I mean, and there was times where Gene kind of lost his focus a little bit and started doing some movies and stuff like that. And Paul was always about the band. And Gene took a while to kind of come back to get that equilibrium back. But the other original two guys weren't. They got into drugs and they got, you know, the shit hit the fan. And so they went, fuck off. You know, it is hard. There's nobody, it's absolutely hard. But it's not that you have to go out and find a band. It's not like that. But I don't think that there's anything wrong with, you know, forming that, because, you know, seeing a band that have pulled something together, a track where you're like watching it, and it's like, okay, all these guys have done this together.
Yeah.
You know, there's something cool about that.
Yeah, I mean, think so. There is something still exciting of four or five or a band on stage that are all singularly focused in creating an amazing experience.
Pulling in the same direction.
You know, yeah, creating an amazing experience for their audience, you know. Yeah. That's just as compelling as a soloist doing that, you know. It's compelling as an orchestra doing that. It's compelling as a duo doing that, you know. It's like, As long as you have that sort of, you know, singular focus. I mean, this is certainly not a discussion of, you know, there shouldn't be any bands. I mean, it's a shame that, you know, bands are seemingly becoming sort of endangered, because there is something exciting about that. There is a different energy, you know, with more than one person on stage. You know, it seems that it's all about economies of scale rather than and practicalities rather than, you know, let's just get a group of people together and just see what happens. You know, music used to be a very impractical, you know, sort of topsy-turvy world, and now it's all, you know, very corporatized and you know, it's very functional, it's very practical, and the most practical thing is to be, you know, a soloist, you know, to be a you know, just to be a singular mobile unit going out and doing things because it's easier, because it's a functional thing to do. So the music industry needs to get some imagination back, I think.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's easier to, it's actually, you know, if you get the band dynamics right, you know, it's easier to create that experience, because you've got more than one person on stage, you know, to really, really create something exciting. And there needs to be more of that.
You know, I mean, I said it before, like, I mean, you know, there's something with bands about sacrifice, right? And you were talking, you mentioned, you know, like from a perspective of, you know, some people kind of do multiple projects.
Mm.
And my thing is that, coming back to the kind of marriage example, right? When you commit to somebody in a relationship, you're basically going, I can't have a relationship with anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
That's the commitment you're making. But see, the problem is that now everybody wants everything. They don't want to, I can do whatever I want. I'm an individual and I can, you know, so they're like, you know, so relationships don't last, you mm-hmm. know, because people get on social media and go, look how many other people are. Yeah, there's 8 billion people.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be a whole bunch of people that you're probably attracted to probably could have a relationship with. Of course there is. And with music, it's like, I wouldn't mind doing a little bit of that and a little bit of that and a little bit of that. And it's just like, well, sometimes to make one thing great, you have to sacrifice not doing that and not doing that and not doing that. And a band like U2, you know, they stay together and, you know, you don't see them doing a million other projects, you know. They probably do a little bit here and a little bit there, but it's like there's a commitment to the thing that they're doing
mm-hmm.
and doing it brilliantly. And you have to sacrifice. It's just like you can't be all things to everybody. That's just how it works. And it's just like if you're not willing to sacrifice, then, you know, and it may or may not I mean, and even as a soloist, obviously, I probably think you need to sacrifice even in that sense to a degree,
yeah.
but not to the same degree. And I don't know. I mean, I don't necessarily think that sacrificing not doing such a wide variety of things is actually in any way diminishing what you're doing. And in actual fact, it can enhance what you're doing because the focus on doing this one thing really well potentially makes you better at it. So what you create is even better. Some sports people, I don't know, might focus on a particular type of race car driving or whatever it might be or a certain thing. They're not trying to be everything. They maybe focus on being really good in this area.
Mm-hmm.
And it can potentially achieve greater results. But now everybody just wants to be, oh, I want to do everything. They're hedonist. You know, they're just like,
well,
it's all about me and getting to do whatever
there is,
I want.
There is, an element, like, there is an element of that, but it all depends on how much you get paid as well. So there's also a financial component for, you know, one of the main reasons why, you know, if you're not forming a band or you're not sticking with a band, you know, to be putting on other hats and to be doing lots and lots of projects is because they're varying income streams.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah.
But it depends whether it's the original scene and whether it's the cover scene and all of that.
That's different. I mean, I'm thinking more like once you've kind of, if you're doing original stuff.
Right.
You know, I mean, I look, if you're a, you know, just a musician, not an artist, you're just I'm just looking to play. I'm a lead guitarist. What song do you want me to play the lead solo for?
Yeah.
That's different.
Yeah.
But okay. If you want to be, you know, a creative individual, you have to sacrifice because
of course you do.
And you have to go, okay, I can't necessarily do every style of music and I have to, you know, focus to a degree. That means doesn't mean you can't have variations on a theme
mm-hmm.
or, you know, and that being said, it depends on what you set up in the first place.
Sure.
You know, because we've spoken about Soul Trader. It's just like, well, let's just see where it takes us, you know. Writing in different styles, I'm actually interested in that. So let's just see how that evolves. But there's two of us, so we can kind of go, well, let's see what happens. You know, maybe one of those other styles will be the thing that gets you might get more traction, and then we can roll with that a little bit. You know, who knows? But we have that kind of, well, choice, I guess, to do that. Mm. But a lot of people just, as I said, it's just the world as a whole is we're very individual. We're very, you know, as you said, me.
Well, I suppose that's the, you know, that's one of the big parts of the answer to the question, you know, are bands, you know, is the concept of the band, you know, dying? And it's like, well, yes, because of the cult of the individual that we're, you know, moving through at the moment as a society.
Yeah, look, I mean, the book I'm reading talks about the fact that we got to where we are because of tribes.
Yeah.
You know, the human race is got to this because of tribes.
Yeah.
Banding together because you and I can fight off the things that are trying to kill us.
Yeah.
You know, back in the day.
Yeah, that's it.
And we've gone so far away from that. We sit in our houses by ourselves. Mm-hmm. Most people live alone. Mm-hmm. They reckon in 20 years' time or whatever, almost everybody will live alone. Married couples are so busy at work, they come home, they don't even know each other. Yeah. You know, as a society, it's a reflection of society so yeah. much that we're individual. We sit at home on our computers. We talk to people on social media. We don't talk to them in person. We don't connect. Mm-hmm. And that's sad. So I think the yeah. band thing is a reflection of where we're at.
Yeah.
What would be really nice is, again, bucking that trend. Yeah. That's what bands used to be about, was like, fuck the system, let's do it yeah. different. Yeah. So, you know.
Find something to fight against and then get a group of like-minded people together and just, you know, as Frank Zappa would say, grab a guitar and whack it
yeah.
and see what happens.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Dave Grohl said something very similar about, you know, Foo Fighters and Nirvana, you know. It's like, you know, the best thing that a musician can do is get a group of people and just, you know, get instruments, get into a garage and just play shit, you know, just play shit, man, just suck at it and just keep going and going and going and going until it starts to come together, you yeah. know. And that's the most closest you'll feel with other individuals is if you all suck playing music together, you know. Yeah. There's nothing better than sounding crap with each other until it actually starts to come together, you know.
Yeah.
I remember being in my first band, you know, and it was just woefully awful, guitars out of tune and stuff, but we had the best time and some amazing, you know, stuff was written that'll never see the light of day, but we did that together, yeah. you know. It's like, yeah, it would be lovely to have all that back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you're out there and you think about starting a band, we are right behind you.
Yeah.
Tell them Soul Trader sent you. Yeah. Soul Trader said it was okay. Who the fuck are they? but yeah, give it a bash. You know,
yeah, give it a bash.
And fight the man, fight against the system.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. Tell us what you think. We'll post this on social media. You can go over there and, you know.
Who are your favourite bands
yeah.
that are around now?
Yes.
It's like, yeah.
Do you have any favourite bands who have kind of emerged in, you know, the last kind of just few years, you yeah. know, a handful of years, maybe, you know, slightly before yeah. the pandemic or something like that, rather than all the old ones that have been around for a long time.
Yeah.
Let us know. I mean, I've discovered some that have probably been around a bit longer. Yeah, let us know in the comments on social media. We always appreciate the comments on the podcast. And we'll be back
until
again
then,
next week.
Yeah, next week for episode number 12.
Yeah.
But we'll sign off on legs 11.
Yeah, we've got to a dozen.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening.
Ciao for now.
See ya.
You have been listening to the Soul Trader podcast, music, creativity, and other plans with your hosts, Simon James Betts and Corey